Welcome to Medicine Trails, a life in many worlds, a lively account of Mavis McCovey, a Kudyk medicine woman. Our excerpts are read by her niece, Florine McCovey. This episode is titled, The Vision Gift.
The Vision Gift. I got so that I would know if someone I knew of was going to drown. I didn't have to really know the person, but if I knew of them, knew who they were, in my vision I would see the water where they would drown. This year was the first time I saw a drowning in the ocean, but all my life, starting with my mother, I have seen drownings in the river. I would see the river the way it was going to look when the person drowned, like whether it's muddy or murky or green, the way it was when one of the local men drowned. Before he drowned, the river I saw in my vision was high and the water was green. I kept thinking, God, that river's so high. I wonder who I know where this high green river is. And then I saw the Klamath had risen and the water was green. I thought, that river looks just like my dream. I wonder who it is who is going to drown in it. Sometimes if I pray about a vision, I will continue to see that vision for a while. I might see it once or twice more after praying, and then it goes away. But if I see it three or four times, and it just keeps coming back, I know then that it's going to happen, no matter what I do. It's going to be. Sometimes I can change the vision and what is going to happen by praying about it. What I see happening will change to something else, like I will first see death, and it will change to injury if I pray on it hard enough. It wouldn't be exactly what you saw, but you can tell that it's close enough that what you saw had changed by praying about it. Sometimes the vision doesn't change, and the event I've been seeing will happen like I have been seeing it. My visions are like seeing through a glass darkly, like the Bible says. The visions are murky and not really that clear. You don't really see who it is. You see someone and know they are close to you, somebody you know, but it doesn't reveal exactly who that person is. Sometimes they are so close to you that you won't see who the person is at all. And when that happens, I know they are really close to me. If the power won't show me something about the person involved, I just know something terrible is coming to someone that I know. I pray about what I've seen in the vision, and sometimes it comes anyway. For months, I had visions in which I could see three guys dead in the woods up above the Ishy Pishy Club, a bar in Orleans. But I couldn't see a face, not one face, so I knew it was someone really close to me. I could feel they were really close, and I saw it over and over again. I just kept praying about it, and I went to Josephine Peters and had her pray with me about it. We prayed and prayed, and then I'd have the vision again. I would be driving by from work down in Hoopaw and just feel it and see it when I drove through Orleans. I knew it was going to be someone I knew who was really close to me. Long Gone was 20 years old and had just finished playing baseball at the field behind the Orleans school. He and some other young men had been drinking at the baseball field, and he just came into the bar to see if his dad was there so he could get a little money to buy some booze to drink down under the bridge. The man who shot him told Long Gone, "I came up here to shoot Bart Starrett, but I think I'll shoot you." Long Gone said he had just turned to drop down when the man shot him through the right lung. The doctor told me that when he felt Long Gone's throat, he could feel the jugular vein barely quivering. The blood and air in his chest had his heart pushed over so far that it could hardly flicker, but it was still working, so he wasn't dead quite. He was just half a step from it. Carol was still riding with Roy McGaines, looking for the man who had shot Long Gone and Dennis. They spotted a car out ahead of them, and Roy asked Carol, "Is that the guy?" Carol said, "I don't know. I can't see him yet." By the time she could tell it was the fellow they were looking for, he was almost out of range. And Roy just took a shot at his car and hit the back bumper. Long Gone told me later that when that air and blood were drained from his chest by the doctor, he woke up and the doctor told him, "This is going to hurt a little bit." Then the doctor stuck a shunt into his jugular vein, and he almost blacked out from the pain. When he came to again, he said, "Hurt a little?" I don't know what they would say if it was going to hurt a lot. Then they commenced to put in another shunt and IV lines every place and started pouring saline into him. I waited for a couple of hours, and one of the nurses gave me a cup of coffee. And then pretty soon, one of the doctors came whistling down the hall. The nurse looked at how the doctor was approaching us and said, "Well, he's doing all right then." The doctor said, "He's doing very well." "How well?" "Well, it's a miracle. He's lost half his blood, and he's stable on IVs. But the bad news is, the ambulance has a flat tire now, so we have to keep him here until the tire is fixed." It took them about a half hour to get the tire fixed and ready to go, and they took him out by ambulance to the hospital in Eureka. Long Gone wanted to see me before they took him away from Hoopaw, and when he saw me, he said later that he just knew he was going to be okay. He knew that he was going to live because I told him I would see him in Eureka. He said, "You know, I lost half my blood, and you got me to thinking I was fine." When he told me that later, I said, "Yeah, but Long Gone, I never told you that I would see you alive." He said, "I never thought of that." Having me say I would see him in Eureka was all he needed to be convinced that he would live. He knew if I said I'd see him there, he would be there, and he assumed alive. I told Carol that I had prayed all the time to change this vision I'd been having of three dead people so that no one would die, and nobody died, even though in my vision I kept seeing three people dying. But as far as I knew, at the time, only two people had been shot. Long Gone was hurt the worst. Nothing happened to the man who shot him, and even though Dennis was shot, it was not fatal and did not leave him crippled, so that prophecy was changed. About 5 years later, the shooter was charged with being in possession of a large quantity of methamphetamine. In 1987, he was in protective custody in Central Prison for dealing in methamphetamine when he was killed by another prisoner. Long Gone kept track of him until he was killed because he said the son of a bitch might try to come back and finish the job.
Listen to Medicine Trails. Our next excerpt is called Picking Up Power. Medicine Trails, A Life in Many Worlds, The Stories of Mavis McCovey, was produced by KIDE-FM for National Native American Heritage Month with the permission of Mavis McCovey, John Sotler, and Heyday Books, Berkeley, California. Our music melody by Dr. Kashan Laura Cooper.